warriors. Commence strategic maneuvers at audible command signal. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
It's right, we're back.
What?
Yes,
we're back?
We are live.
Right
we are
now?
Back. That's right. No, seriously, this is the real deal. This is not an archive. You are listening to the Movies Hate You Show.
Welcome to the Movies Hate You Show.
That's the one part of the show I didn't miss.
You'd love that part.
On a forced hiatus from Todd Sheets.
I think we've gotten better.
Here we are live, Tuesday, November 26th, 2013. That's right, Thanksgiving week. This is our Thanksgiving special, and we're going to give thanks. And I want to give thanks for the fine gentleman that I do this show with. That is to my left, my venerable Asian valet and manservant occasionally, Lee Peterson, a.k.a. Mr. Ree.
You're welcome. I mean, hello.
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 And on the boards as usual, at the Jackalope Mothership over there in Kansas City, Missouri, the home of recalled governors and drive-bys, Todd Sheets!
Yay!
Was there a recalled governor? You guys were just in the news. There's something went down. One of your mayors went ballistic or something over there. Isn't that true?
You know, it's always something here. It's like the breeding ground of inbreeding. So therefore, you can swing by the meth lab, pick you up a rock, and scream to hell I'm back here in Kansas City.
Perfect for you to be based there.
No, no, terrible, terrible.
I've seen your films, and it's the perfect home for those bastards of cinema that you call your filmography.
That's right, that's right.
So, it's the Movies Hate You Show. We are going to talk about movies. We have a special guest at 7:30. A filmmaker is coming to join us.
Yay.
And I'll introduce him then. I'll let everyone be surprised. If you want to call in between now and then, it's 310-928-7857. Call in, ask us some questions. Ask us where we've been for the last few weeks.
But be careful, because be careful what you ask, because you might get an answer.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have time for a prank call tonight. That's too bad.
I don't think so.
No. Okay.
I'm rusty. You know, it's been, how long has it been?
Rusty, guys. It's been on and off. We came on, what, three weeks ago we did a quickie?
I'm like a rusty trombone. You know, you have a trombone and the sound makes when it's rusty.
I think you're mixing your metaphors.
Really?
Yes.
I do. I'll have to look that up.
Ask Todd about it. Todd looks like, if you've ever seen a picture of Todd, Todd looks like the kind of guy who might know such things.
Hmm. You mean he's a musician?
Yes.
That's what you mean.
Yes. Yes.
Brass.
Kind of think
brass
somehow band. I'm getting dogged out. I just don't know.
That sounds like another mixed metaphor.
Hmm.
Dogged out. Isn't dogging when you, like, you're in a car with your girlfriend, like, hanging out in the back seat, let's say, and somebody's watching you, a stranger is watching, isn't that called dogging?
I don't know enough about that one, buddy.
When a guy is... Callers, give us a scoop on that. I don't feel like Googling. Let humans be our Google. That's what I always say.
Let's
ask a person, don't ask a machine. That's my philosophy.
I like that.
Yeah. Dogging. The act of dogging. That's 310-928-7857. What does that have to do with movies?
Nothing.
I don't know, but I want that confirmed. I believe that is the case. It is called... some people, I think, enjoy when they're dogged. You know what I mean? Like, some people intentionally go into public spaces to do a little fun, and they want to be dogged.
Is that when they do it on the paper?
And such things can be arranged on the internet. Did you know that?
Dog?
It's a world of possibilities. Now, what about dog tired? Or, no, working like a dog. That makes no sense. Dogs don't work.
Well, I think the implication is that their tongues are always hanging out with sweat dripping, so it appears that they're working, but...
It should be more like licking yourself like a dog.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. Mm-hmm. It's been a hard day's night, and I'll be sleeping when it's done.
Like a log. He just needed a word to rhyme with log.
Dog.
It had to be dog. Couldn't be working like a frog. Although frogs, you arguably, are as hard... working as dogs.
Well, who's he? Did we ever figure out? Was it McCartney or Lennon?
That would be
on
Lennon.
That one was Lennon.
That would be Lennon. I think line was Lennon.
That line was Lennon. Yeah. Well, the producer of he produced pretty. I forget Michelin. What's his last name? Anyways, Israeli producer, famous producer in Hollywood, produced Pretty Woman. Claims that he's been a spy for the Israelis for the last 30 years, embedded in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And he outed Sidney Pollack as also a spy.
As a spy, really?
Yeah, he's dead.
Sidney Pollack is dead. You know, Sidney Pollack directed me once. There's a movie story for you.
Okay.
These
things always wind up being about you.
Don't they? I was an extra on a movie that Sidney Pollack was directing, and even though this is against the rules...
Was it any good?
What was it called? Sean Penn, Nicole Kidman, espionage kind of
right,
thing.
Right, right, yeah. The corporation or something.
Yeah, informant or
yeah, something. That's, yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, I'm doing this on this scene, and usually the AD directs the extras. I mean, the director is far too important.
There we go. We are live. Ha ha! I checked on you, Todd, and you've passed the test.
I already checked, and I knew it was good.
So Pollack directs you in a scene where you were an extra in the background. In what scene?
He actually walks over. He actually walked over to me and grabbed my shoulders very lightly. He had a light touch.
Right.
He was a spy, after all. He had to.
He was a spy.
Yeah. And he just kind of tweaked me. He moved me about 2 inches.
Right.
And said, "Okay, that's good."
Right.
I said, okay. I've been tweaked.
And you were frozen. You were like, this Hollywood director just tweaked me. Now I can't. He didn't twerk you. He tweaked you. And he might have been twerking behind you. You don't even know that. So yeah, you have to look at the daily. And so you were frozen and you were like, if I move, I'm going to get fired. Because why would the director come over and move you? If not nothing but to show his power on the set, why would he be bothered with such a mundane task?
I think what he was doing was showing us that he's a man of the people.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
not too good to do this.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. He's not up on that high chair over there, just with the megaphone and he's got the one spectacle in the eye and the little hat. You know, and he's
Von Stroheim.
The Von Stroheim method.
Mark Snow.
I would love to see somebody like do that now. You know, wouldn't it be cool if somebody still did that?
Harvey Korman used to do that.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying that was a gag. Yeah, I mean, for real, like if somebody, like that's the way, like Ed Wood went to the set in a dress and a Gora sweater. Well, this guy always shows up with the little, you know, it's like the Paul Bartel, you know.
Bogdanovich has the ascot.
Bogdanovich has the ascot.
Spike Lee has the
bow tie,
right?
Oh, those are the guys with him. Bow tie, yes. The Nation of Islam. Old Boy coming out.
Old Boy.
Looks pretty good.
Terrible reviews, isn't it?
You know, it's funny. I've been seeing commercials for it, and all the kind of amazing twist ending. If you slow down the commercial and you watch it, all the quotes are fan tweets.
Uh-huh.
They're not attributed to any publication. It's like it's got the little bird, the tweet bird. And then, you know, John Doe, you know, like whoever tweeted it.
Wow.
And it's probably like somebody's friend at the studio said, tweet this, and then we're going to use it in the advertising. And it goes by so fast, if you're not watching like a VOD or something where you can actually pause it, it's hilarious. But it looks good. I don't know.
Yeah,
it looks good.
I don't know.
People beating each other up. Mm-hmm. People taking a box cutter to Sam Jackson's throat. I mean, how can you go wrong with something like that?
Now, I'm confused. That reminds me of the Keanu Reeves thing that's going. I'm a little confused. There's a Man of Tai Chi. Right?
There's one that Keanu Reeves directed. Mm-hmm. There's a movie he directed, and then there's the Ronin movie, Ronin, which he right. stars in, which is not. But yeah, Man of Tai Chi, which got also terrible reviews, came out, but that was his like directorial debut, with starring the guy who did the stunt coordination for the Matrix film. So they've been cooking this up for a long time, I guess. But yeah, that's the. Yeah, okay. I got horrible reviews, man.
The posters were so similar. I thought it was the same. I thought maybe it was retitling.
But. I think that's what there is, a little bit of drafting going on. Mm. You know, but I think Keanu produced and directed it. Mm-hmm. But not getting good reviews. Old boy, you know. And Spike Lee's hit or miss. You know, I'm more forgiving than other people. Spike Lee and his work. Personally, I think he's an idiot. But
they made him drop the ridiculous Spike Lee joint.
Right, a Spike Lee joint. That was like the original director was like, you cannot remake.
No.
You know, do it in the Mr. Reeve voice.
No remake.
Joint.
Spike Reeve.
Spike Reeve joint. No. Mr.
No
Reeve and Spike
Reeve. Mr. Reeve.
No remake. Mr. Reeve, no extra in Old Boy remake. I don't want to move him 2 inches. Every movie he extra in, director must move him 2 inches. I don't want this on my set.
You know, I could have actually filed a grievance against him.
You could have.
I could have, because he actually had no right to touch me. I could have sued him. I'm not that kind of guy.
What do you mean, through like the SAG?
Through SAG, yeah. Actually, it is. It's a violation. A director actually, not the physical touching part, but the director. He's not allowed to give direction to extras.
Right, only the AD can do that.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. So,
I liked it. I appreciated it. I knew it would make a story someday. Not a good story particularly, but a story.
A story you could tell on this show.
On a slow day.
Yeah. We're like the clearinghouse for like the worst Hollywood stories.
Grandpa, tell us your Sidney Pollack story again.
It's like on cinema, you know. It's like, here's the corner where the character turned and walked up the street. You know, like that's the big thing. How many people got that reference?
None. If you did call in, 310.
They're not calling.
ZATSUKS. That sucks.
Everyone is traveling right now.
Oh yeah, it's a holiday week.
Yeah, exactly. It's a holiday week. Everyone's off. Everyone's off from getting free entertainment on the interradio, the red radio.
Should we, you know, my kids have actually mentioned this to me recently, that there aren't any good Thanksgiving movies. There just aren't Thanksgiving movies.
Yeah.
What can we recommend to people?
Are they ever going to make a Thanksgiving feature film?
I don't think so.
I don't think that would be good for the kids. Mm. You can show them the trailer and see if they would be interested. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. Eli Roth's Thanksgiving.
Is
that the name of it?
Thanksgiving is a movie series.
Not Thanksgiving. What's the one? Thanksgiving is with the killer turkey.
The killer turkey. That's a good one. Part 4 is out right now.
No, part 3. But here's the catch, which is very clever. Part 1 came out, was a hit. They skipped part 2. But part 3 is about the turkey trying to hunt down the last copy of part 2, and it was so bad he's trying to destroy it. Kills people in his wake. Uh-huh. So there is a part 2, but only in the canon of the films. There is no actual release to the public of a part 2.
Uh-huh.
But within the films, there is a part 2. Everyone else was confused. Mm-hmm. It's a little too ambitious for the average mutant that likes these kind of films. I'm just
kidding. I like the first one.
If you liked Old Boy... You'll like Thanksgiving 3.
Please don't say that.
What's the one that Eli Roth directed the fake trailer in Grindhouse? Why am I saying Thanksgiving?
Yeah,
Thanksgiving.
It was just called Thanksgiving.
Was it called Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Thanksgiving films. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. This sounds like you're getting into like a rom-com territory that I'm not familiar with.
Well, they're just starting. I mean,
home for the holidays.
There's a million Christmas movies, obviously.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving. There's Free Birds, which is out now. Kids.
Free Birds just came out.
But that just illustrates the point that there aren't any other movies.
Is there a Charlie Brown?
Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, yeah. But feature.
There's
films.
No Rankin Bass. I mean, they never tackled the Thanksgiving thing. Right. I wonder if it's because Thanksgiving's really kind of, it's really an American thing. It doesn't translate into other countries. Like, you couldn't sell Thanksgiving. Mm. You couldn't sell that to, you know, China. They're like, what does that mean? They have to change their name to, like, you know,
Thanksgiving.
Chicken killer or something. Yeah. I don't know. I'm wondering. Christmas is more global, maybe. Mm-hmm. Is it?
Maybe. I guess everybody has their own sort of
version of it. Everybody has Santa. Mm. Doesn't everybody get Santa? You're a little sleepy today.
Krampus? I'm sleepy?
You're a little sleepy.
It's been a long day.
Has it?
Yeah. It's always a long day.
You want to take a nap?
Do you mind? Wake me up.
I'll wait till I bring the guest in. You can take it in 10 minutes. We'll bring our guest in, and then you can take a nap. Yeah.
I'll hang, yeah.
I want you to tell him what you think of his film when he comes on. How about that?
We'll do it. Just wake me up.
I'll wake you up. Todd, can we put Mr. Ree on a timer and get him some sleep?
That's a good idea.
If you'd like, we could do that.
Todd, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Nothing.
Why?
Oh.
It's a long story.
I was thinking about getting a job at Walmart just for Thanksgiving. Just for Thanksgiving Day.
I think you should do that.
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't that technically be Black Friday Eve? It's not really Thanksgiving anymore. It's really Black Friday. You see, like the craziness. Like we're open at, you know, we're opening at 7 p.m. Thanksgiving night. Like they just keep pushing it.
Yeah.
It's no longer Black Friday. It's kind of like
5 o'clock at Best Buy.
Yeah, they just wish that could we make it so that people don't have to eat dinner with their family, and we could just have them come in on Thanksgiving morning and shop all the way till Sunday evening. That's what they would like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what they like. Which is so absurd. I mean, do people do this?
People do. You know, it's incredible. I have not shopped on Black Friday, I don't think, ever.
I did once when I was in high school with a girl I was dating. Her mother wanted to go Black Friday shopping, and I got dragged into this with them.
Mm.
I don't get it.
No.
I don't get it.
You see the videos on YouTube of people being trampled. And
it happens.
Horrible. It horrible happens. People. Why would you? And what do you save, $30 at the end of the day?
If that, I mean, because a lot of that stuff's bait and switch trickery just to get you into the store. They might say, oh, you get this flat screen TV for $300. It's a $1,000 TV or whatever. And you know, fine print's two available. So if you're one of the first two people, I guess you get a good deal. But it's just to bring in the other 400 people who are going to trample you.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't. It's just not me. I know Todd's kind of into that stuff, but. Mm.
Todd, do you have big Black Friday plans there?
Not too much. My daughter always wants to go out for that, and so I guess I'm going to do that kind of thing.
How old is your daughter?
Huh?
How old is she?
She's 13.
Oh, my God. How did you raise this girl?
She just loves the whole she's a thrill seeker, man. She loves roller coasters, and she loves Black Friday for that same reason, I think.
Todd, you're kind of like that. I mean, if a movie comes out, you go the night before at midnight, and you show up in the costume and everything. You're kind of an event guy, too.
I am, yeah.
That's where she gets it from.
It's true. I kind of like that.
Is she kind of the, like, if you wear the Batman suit, does she kind of wear the, you know, from Kick-Ass, like the hit girl costume, and you guys go out together? Because you could pass as like Nicolas Cage was basically Batman in that movie, right?
Kind of.
So, can you guys do like a hit girl? And I don't know, what was his name in the film? What was his?
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy and hit girl kind of combo thing, and go out and do Black Friday and start like slicing off people's legs and stuff.
That would be cool.
I think that would be cool, man.
I would like it. I would like that. Yeah. Of course, I'm crazy.
Well, don't change the subject.
Yeah. Seriously, man.
Yeah, I think. Well, I have. We've done costume contests and won them together because I made her a Batgirl costume, just like I made the Batman that I have, and that was cool. So that was a you know, we did that.
So you never thought to do a hit girl thing?
No. Didn't think it would be good for her to be out kicking people in the face. It might get us in some trouble.
Well, obviously not to hurt people, but just like a cool Halloween getup.
We do have the Halloween getups, yeah. We, like I say, we have won some awards with that. So that worked out pretty good.
You know, I did a little crime fighting myself the other day.
Uh-oh.
Oh. Yep.
We've been off the air for so long.
We've got 6 minutes.
This would have been a perfect story to tell. This actually happened last Tuesday, but since we weren't on the air...
That's right.
I had to save it. So, I was coming out of a deli. I got some lunch. I was at work. And a little commotion. I saw a guy run past me. And then I hear a woman scream from the crowd, "Stop, thief!" Like she's in a comic strip, right? Stop thief.
It's like a Dick Tracy comic.
Like, who says that?
Yeah.
Who says stop thief?
Stop.
So immediately Mr. Reese stopped and turned around, looking around.
Do not manhandle me on these streets of the city.
Yes. Yes. Chris is foiled again, he says at the end of it.
Yeah, and ironically enough, he's wearing a striped shirt and he's got a little he's got a little thing over his eyes, like this little black mask.
Just a bag with dollar signs on it. That's how I knew he was probably a robber.
No, it's like the crook from Monopoly.
Yeah.
Down the street.
Do not pass go. Go to jail. So I see this guy run past, you know, in the blink of an eye. Guy runs, woman screams, another guy pulls himself out of the crowd and runs after the guy. So my first thought is, oh, cool, it's under control. Somebody's on it. Great. I'm going to go back to work. And then I realized that nobody else was doing anything. Only this one guy was running after the guy. So I did run after him. Took off in pursuit. And we ended up chasing this guy about 7 blocks, flagged down some cops along the way, chased him into the subway station, where the cops, for some reason, didn't tell the conductor to hold the train. The guy's on the train. The doors are open. He gets away. End of story.
Sometimes crime does pay.
Crime does pay. Well, he dropped the purse along the way, so she got her purse back. I suppose all's well that ends well. But I was so close to catching the perp. Perp. That's lingo. Crime fighting.
The
lingo.
Skill. Yeah. So is that what you police officers call them?
The perp. Yeah.
Perps.
Yeah.
We call them the actor.
Oh.
Yeah. You ever hear that when the cops say the actor was? Yeah. I used to work at a newspaper and we get the police blotters and they would say the actor then went and broke into the car. They call him the actor.
Actor.
Yeah.
Actor.
Not in literally the actor, the person acting out the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Who committed the act.
Not the thespian.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right, because you don't know sexual orientation.
Right. I think we actually misuse it when we call a theatrical performer an actor.
Mm. Unless it's John Wilkes Booth. Then you'd be right on both counts.
Both counts.
Yeah.
The thespic actor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The actor, and then in parentheses, who is also a thespian. The actor, who is also a thespian.
Also known as...
Shot the president.
Hmm.
It's good.
There we go.
Now, did you feel you might have done better had you been wearing Todd's Batman outfit?
I really wish... Yeah, I wish I had. But who's, you know...
Now, these guys, there are people who go around and think they're superheroes and they wear the costume and everything. They're kind of like a 21st century guardian angels, in a sense. They just hang around, you know, looking for crime.
Looking for crime.
Trying to help people out. Do you think these guys ever run into that kind of thing? Or is that like their total wet dream to like run into that? But you just happen to be walking out of a deli and running into it.
Just happen to be.
These guys walk around for hours.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Batman over here in Hoboken that just drives around on the bike all the time.
Is there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a Batman.
What is he? He never gets jumped?
I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah. You would think that would be a kind of a test or a kind of a provocation for bad guys.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's Batman. Let's beat him up.
Let's beat him up.
Yeah. And then like seven Crips.
It's like meeting Mike Tyson in a bar, you know?
Right.
You got to throw a punch at the guy.
Yeah.
You just have to.
Yeah. I could take this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Rob Ford, you know? Mm. He's going to kill. Wasn't he talking about Tyson? Wasn't that the.
I missed that.
The undercover. They had him filmed. He was hanging out with the Bloods, I believe.
Mm.
And he was talking about how he's going to kill somebody, but it turns out I think he was talking about a boxer or Tyson or someone.
I have to get the Rob Ford app on my phone so I can get updates, you know.
I'm moving to Toronto. Is he still?
He's not leaving.
No, he's not going anywhere.
He won't. I have to kill him.
He might just kill himself.
Well, yeah, if you look at his.
God, he looks. There's the Chris Farley role of a lifetime that will never happen.
Yeah. Although somebody did a, I guess
Farley wanted to play Fatty Arbuckle, but let me tell you, he would have been playing Rob Ford.
Yeah. Somebody did like a mashup online of a trailer for like the Rob Ford story starring Chris Farley. It's pretty good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I have to see that.
Yeah. YouTube, I think, is where you'd find
you,
that. YouTube.
So that's the letter U and then two?
It's
T-O-B?
W, I think there's a couple of W's.
The triple W. Now, is there an HTTP before that?
Boy, I don't know.
And a colon.
There's a colon, maybe?
There's a colon in there.
When Rob
Why are
Ford
we talking
is,
about anuses? Why are we talking what, about what, anuses?
Why do I... Yeah, look, yeah. The curmudgeon from Missouri has to blow the subtle humor that we're going for, talking about colon. Why are we talking about buttholes? Hold on, let me get my drink. Why are we talking about buttholes? Well, subtlety's lost on me.
We'll switch to entendres from now on.
Entendres.
No double entendres.
See, now we confused him. He shut up.
Nope.
Hear that? We said entendre. 7:31. Oh. Hey, maybe we can bring our guest in.
I was already a step ahead of you here.
We are bringing on, now full disclosure, this show is sponsored by Wild Eye Releasing, which happens to be my company. Full disclosure, transparency. We're bringing on a director of a new film we just released this past week.
Now, real full disclosure, I'm not wearing underwear.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But is the director we're bringing on wearing underwear? That's the question.
Okay.
So, we have this great new film called, yeah,
I'll do it. Caesar and Otto's Deadly Christmas.
Oh, I like that.
Now this is the most recent film in the Caesar and Otto series.
That's correct.
Yes.
That's correct. Which, you know, began online, and there was a feature film called Caesar and Otto's Summer Camp Massacre,
mm-hmm.
which another company, I won't name who they are, put it out a couple years ago. I won't say who they are though. One of our, you know, friendly competitors.
Rivals.
But Deadly Christmas is now in the Wild Eye family. Uh-huh. So we're going to bring on Dave Canfield, who not only made this whole thing happen, but also stars in the film as Caesar.
He's a multi-hyphenate. He wrote it, I believe, too. He wrote it, directed it.
Everything.
Acted
everything. Co-wrote it.
Co-wrote it.
Co-wrote it. Co-produced it.
Co-acted.
Co-acted. He did the editing. You know, who knows what else we can ask him. Catering. You know, there's only certain things I'm privy to with these films. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the details. I'm not on the set. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I want to know about is catering. That's the kind of inside Hollywood stuff that we just don't hear enough of.
It's
How
true.
Was the food? How
it's
was
true.
The catering?
Mm-hmm. It's true. A lot of times you'll hear people say, you know what? The movie really stunk, but the food was good.
Yeah.
You know? When they're working on a film.
We know everything there is to know about Jaws, the making,
except the food.
The food.
Yeah. Mm. Do we know?
I don't know. I've never heard anyone talk about it. I'm guessing a lot of seafood.
I want you to investigate this and get back to us next week. So, Mr. Producer, do we have a guest on the phone?
I am working on it, guys. I'm having an issue with Skype here. It won't let me make a phone call.
Working on it.
I am working on it.
Foiled by Skype.
Foiled again.
When Dave Canfield, the director of Caesar and Otto's Deadly Christmas, now available at Amazon.com. I love the shill for this movie. I love it. Mm. I love shilling movies on this page. It's like, guess what? When you watch the news and they do a segment on something, it's because the same company that owns the news station owns whatever the book is or the movie that they're promoting on there. So we're doing the same thing here, but we're telling you right up front. Yeah. We are selling films here.
Transparency.
Transparency. We are entertaining you. We don't always talk about our films, but we are selling movies at the end of the day, and we need you to buy them to keep us in business and keep this show on the air. Mm. See?
There you go.
We're just download it. $1.99. 99 cents. Go to iTunes. Go. We're not asking for a lot.
No.
You give more to like some bum on Kickstarter than that.
Yeah, Spike Lee.
You gave more to Spike Lee. You've probably given more to Spike Lee over your lifetime than you've given to us. Hmm. And what has he done for you lately?
Exactly.
It's going to be a few minutes, guys. I'm trying to get this thing to work, so bear with me.
Oh, this is unbelievable.
I know.
This is real.
Live radio.
This is real low-budget radio. You know how they call it B-movies? This is B-radio.
It's actually not. It's called We Need to Really... I wish Skype would never have gotten bought by Microsoft. That would make our lives a lot better.
Stop talking and start letting your fingers do the walking on that phone number. It sounds like you're talking.
I'm walking and talking.
Anyway, so you've seen the film.
Yes.
Mr. Reed. Yes. I force you to watch it, as I do all our films. And you're a big fan of it?
I'm as big a fan as you can find. As big a fan as there is in this room right now.
I'm a big fan of this movie. This movie made me laugh, so I don't think you could be a bigger fan than I am. I mean, I had to go through all the legal wrangling to sign contracts and do all this work to get it out on the market. So there can't be a bigger fan than me other than the people who made the film, obviously. So, I'm challenging your assertion.
Give me a 30-second sell. Sell the movie to me in 30 seconds. What was it? Is it about it that you enjoy?
Well, first of all, I think Dave Canfield's hilarious. Okay, his the Caesar character is this odd. He's a real odd bird as his character, but I don't know who to compare him to, which is what makes it so brilliant. It's this nuanced, bizarre. He's like a wannabe actor who's super delusional, but. There are several things in the film. First of all, it celebrates independent horror films. In fact, it pokes fun at them. It pokes fun at the fact that they don't make money. It's the references in it to other films outside of horror are there. Plus, it's a spoof of like Silent Night, Deadly Night. I mean, Leanna Quigley's in this thing, and she gets killed on the antlers like she did in that film. And there's a lot of that kind of straight up homage type stuff. But it's so smart, yet it doesn't go to the point. There's no pretension to the intelligence on display, and it's not afraid to be completely silly and out there and take chances on a comedy level, which I really enjoy. Which I really feel, you know what? Hey, if it doesn't work every time, that's fine. They took these chances when they know that they're intelligent enough to not have had to do that. So instead of making something that's snarky and kind of too cool for school, they went and kind of just like said, here we are naked, and just went for some crazy, tried some crazy experimental ideas in it, which I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Definitely some experimental stuff. And it is, you can tell it's a movie that he wanted to make.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not catering to
the market. It's not catering to fans. It's mm-hmm. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm into this and I'm a fan too, but I'm going to throw you a curveball, so you might get some kind of negative feedback from that, from fans or from critics saying like, well, I don't get this, but if you, I mean, I got it immediately when I saw it, but I was like, okay. Hmm. This is what I want to see, because you have to understand how much stuff I see as somebody who does this, whether, it's just as a fan or people are sending me their movies, and so much stuff is derivative of the genre. It's like people think, imitating their films or, having, calling a character like Carpenter or Raimi, they think that's clever, and it's not, and it's stomach churning. So when somebody can actually attempt to spoof the genre, but then do it in a original way, it definitely strikes a chord with me, mm-hmm.
Now, have you seen the other Cesar Nato?
I did. Films? I did, and it's very good as well, and it's similar, but it's not as polished as this one. This one is like, you know, it's kind of like the next step, you know. And I'm not just saying that because we didn't release the other one, but it's definitely, you know, it's a couple, you know, it's a couple years later, and it's definitely, you know, it's the next level in slickness. And it's getting great reviews. You know, it's getting some kind of mixed reviews. I mean, anytime you attempt something that's not what people are used to. And I think also we have this problem with, like, people thinking our movies are $500,000 movies or something. Or we're doing independent micro-budget cinema. So, you know, we get a lot of this, like, yeah, but it wasn't, you know, as good as Hatchet 3 or something. It's like, that was like $1 million movie. We did a $5,000 movie. Like, what are you doing? You know, just this kind of weird, I don't know if the culture of the fans is changing, where they're always expecting top notch. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like when the studios got into, like, Jaws, like when Jaws happened, and guys like Corman didn't know what to do, so they started upping their budgets because they figured, hey, well, nobody's going to pay $4 to come see, you know, crappy B movie like they used to, because now the studios are making B movies, but they're making them with 10 times our budget. So I don't know if we're feeling that, where everything's so slick and HD and perfect on TV, that, you know, something that seems like a shot on video or kind of homemade is kind of looked down upon. You know, I don't know if that's what we're experiencing, where every consumer has been completely brainwashed into thinking this is what a movie looks like. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't look like that or conform or have the actors in it or the budget, then it doesn't exist. It doesn't. There's no validity to it. Maybe that's what's happening.
And do you think that maybe the packaging is confusing people to any degree? Because your stuff looks like, I mean, it looks like something with a budget. It looks like other stuff. So is that confusing?
I hope so.
If you get a negative review, what I mean is,
I think so.
Is
because
they were confused?
I've had it in reviews where they say, oh, you know, like when we did Showgirls 2, which is a you know, it cost money. I mean, it wasn't a cheap film to make by low budget standards, but we get a lot of like, oh, I get a slick Hollywood cover to make you think like it was like Showgirls, or you know, and then they're,
of course
they're,
we did,
of course. But that, see, that's my job. Yeah. That's my job, is to get it out there as much as possible, get into stores, and get you to give me your $2 to watch it or whatever. So that's my job, and hopefully you'll like it. Hmm. And there won't be a problem. But you do get a problem where they're like, I was expecting, you know, Gina Gershon to show up. I got this.
After much hell, I think we've got him.
There we go. Hey, there we go.
We've been vamping long enough.
What a mess.
Now we're going to hear it from the horse's mouth.
Hello.
Salt the guy.
Mr. Campfield.
Hi there.
Caesar, how are you? Who do you want to be? Dave? Do you want to be Caesar or do you want to be Dave?
We're gonna take turns. We're gonna be Dave part of the time, and then we're gonna be Caesar the rest of the time. Who would you like to talk to first?
I love this. Everybody, welcome to the Movies Hate You Show. Dave Campfield, aka Caesar, from Caesar Renato's Deadly Christmas and Caesar Renato's Summer Camp Massacre, available from a different company than Wild Eye, and also
an inferior company. Why do you think that I went to Wild Eye?
I would never say such a thing.
Well, you might not say anything. You have your ass covered, pal. But let me just say, your company rocks my socks.
Oh, my God. I love this. Let's continue. Let me tell you something. We tried to call you at 7:30. We had a Skype issue. So Mr. Rhee is here, Lee Peterson, the co-host of the show. And we've been talking about your movie for the last 12 minutes. So when you hear this, you'll hear me trying to sell it. He told me to give him the 30-second elevator pitch of why I like this movie, and I wind up giving him like 8 minutes of why I like the movie and just going on this crazy tangent about fans these days and bloggers and et cetera. So we've already sold the film, so basically we don't need you. We're going to hang up on you, and just I'm going to continue ranting.
Oh, don't you dare.
All right, so we do have you know, about 17 minutes to talk about the movie, so we do have more time, but I apologize for our technical problems that we couldn't get you at 7:30. That's
okay. I'm back to Dave right here. So I'll listen back and I'll hear how you pitched it, but how I pitch it is, if you took Dumb and Dumber, Silent Night, Deadly Night, and a trauma film, and you threw it in a blender, boom, you've got Caesar and Otto's Deadly Axis. The thing is, that can make some people's heads explode. You know, in this age, it's like, oh, what is this, a horror film, a horror comedy film? When they put it in, it's either they stay on that roller coaster for the ride that it is, or they stand up and say, I'm getting off, I don't know what the hell's going on, and then they get beheaded. It is such a different film that's why you got love and hate. It's like, I'm the kind of guy that gets bored of the same old generic. There's a girl being stalked in the woods, and there's no story. I give you a surplus story. There is so much happening, and it is so fast-moving that I'm not giving anybody the opportunity to get bored. You know, as far as I see it, I want this wild, low-budget ride filled with cheesy effects and off-the-wall comedy. Boom, in your face, something different. Promise you, no one's seen something quite like this before.
That and I agree, and that's what I was saying to Lee before, is like the reason, I mean, the movie makes me laugh every time I watch it, and I've watched it a ton of times, of course. We've been in production on getting it out for Street Date, which just passed, and it still makes me laugh, and I think it's very, you know, I'm a huge Adult Swim fan, and to me, it has that kind of experimental feeling in there, but within a genre I really like. So you're messing with the cliches, and you're messing with the fact that, you know, even I love the self-referential stuff about not only the movie.
My screenwriting teacher, it's like when you have cliches, if you're going to put a cliche in your film, you know, the only way you get away with it is if you acknowledge it. And which is my approach, which I know, you know, you pick up on.
Right, but not only that, it's like you're referencing kind of like the back end of the business where they're like, you know, the making money and indie, you know, the average return on investment for an indie film based on what's spent and the budget and all these things. And I'm like, this is just, it's so, it might go beyond some fans because it's almost too self-aware. But like I was saying earlier, which you didn't hear, is that, you know, you can see the intelligence on display in what you guys put together, but you choose to at certain points it's nothing pretentious about it. In other words, you go out and you're just like this silliness in there, where you know that there's an intelligence there that's not just all silly and goofy, but it's an intentional thing that you're doing this on purpose, and you're trying different things, you know, and that might or might not work for the fan. But the fact that I saw that, like, this is really well, you know, thought out, and it's also there is a knowledge there of the industry and a knowledge of, you know, the humor and the acting, et cetera. All that's covered, but then you choose to kind of take it in these different directions where it's like you want people to take this ride with you and, you know, kind of challenge them along the way, which I really enjoyed.
Absolutely. You know, I can't get, like, enough, as far as I see when it comes to this film, I can't get enough content on screen. I want this thing jam-packed from beginning to end, even an animation sequence in there. You know, because we've all checked out your traditional indie, low-budget film, and it's always the same thing, and this film is that, and is the answer to that. Now, you might just be one of those kinds of people that, you know, your intention of going into haunted house is to say it's not scary. Your intention of watching a comedy is to say it's not funny. To those people, you suck, and nothing I can do will change that. But to everybody else who's like me, who wants to just have a good time, see something different, this very well might be that. But you also have to understand that it's not, I can't even say that I'd say a comedy horror cut exactly from the same cloth as a film that I love, like, say, Tucker and Dale or Shaun of the Dead. It's even more experimental than that. It's even more off the wall than that. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's almost like, with some context, you know, with some kind of inkling of what you're getting yourself into, you might, you know, you might think this is a blast. You know, Darren Millar, who is the star, I mean, he can't sing the film's praises enough. This is a guy that gets a lot of, you know, offers to do things, and, you know, this is something that he could have easily said no to, but he was very enthusiastic about the project. He's also a guy, as a death metal artist, as a thrash metal artist, he does stuff that some people love and some people hate as well, so I think he gets that psychotic nature of it, whereas, you know, like, you know, it's something that's you give your all to, and you get varying extreme reactions.
Right, and you know, not only Darren Millar, but, you know, the cast you put together, you know, does, you know, in its own way, those casting choices pay homage to different aspects of the kind of low budget, I don't know, I'm going to say bee world, but yeah, the bee world, that, and which I thought was fascinating in that these people are so used to kind of being a commodity in a sense, like, oh, we need a name, but you bring them in this different way, to where you kind of force them to have fun with this, where it's not,
you know,
just
when
like
is the last time
day.
I'm, you know, in the interest of always doing something different, I think the casting is a reflection of that. You know, if anybody's wondering, how did I get these, you know, this level of caliber actor in a film that's so small? It's because, you know, I appeal to them as actors. I'm an actor myself, even though I play such an over-the-top character in this. You know, I'm saying that I want to see you in a way that I haven't before. I want to give you a character that has a real definition. Brink Stevens hasn't really played this kind of cynical, sardonic biker character exactly in this way, and I want, you know, and I give her a fair amount of direction, and we run with it. I'm giving all the actors something enough to play with so that it's not just giving exposition or generic traditional lines that just pushes the plot forward. You know, I'm trying to give them something that's vibrant and fresh to them. You know, when Linnea Quigley is essentially playing this washed up B-movie actress who's successful for a slasher film in the 80s, I mean, that's really toying with her image in the most extreme, like, you know, it's a very, 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 very exaggerated version of how some people might perceive her, you know,
right.
So, and she hasn't done that before, you know, and that's how I'm able, you know, to hopefully appeal to these people. They see that I just want to make a fun film, something different, something unique, something that they can be proud of, notably the performance that, you know, we're able to conjure together.
And even using Lloyd Kaufman, who everybody seems to use Lloyd, but you actually, he didn't seem like he was playing Lloyd in this.
Yeah. What well, we did was we played the scene from Silent Night, Deadly Night, there's a scene from Silent Night, Deadly Night that we played total homage to in that, and I played him the scene a few times ahead of doing that scene, and I said, this is what we're drawing from. Now let's just get as close as this as we can, but, you know, do a little variation, and then he improvised a little. You know, and which was, you know, maybe his best line was his own improv, but he got into the spirit of what I was going for. Now, I would say that to anybody that, I mean, people are just down on low budget films because it's low budget. You know, it sounds just sad because that means no matter what you do, you're fucked. You're just a low budget filmmaker in some people's eyes. They don't look at the script. They don't look at how carefully my craft performances. It's odd. They just want body count and they want nudity. You guys, yeah. I guess I'm not like you. You know, I want a story. I want something unique. Performance-wise, you know, what's so important to me is that no one sounds vacuous. Everyone has a commitment to the dialogue that's there, some kind of emotional connection so that nothing sounds like this, because how many films is watching a preview before, you know, and the dialogue, we can't go into the woods. Nobody in this film sounds like that, and I made damn sure of that. So
exactly.
Anybody wants to look at how stellar, like Ken McFarlane is probably the best actor that I've worked with. He plays the head of Xmas Enterprises. You know, if anybody speaks ill of his performance, I don't. Then you're going to say that anybody stinks. You know, I hate to be like, I'm being down. I'm kind of focusing on those who are hard on it, but they kind of
broke
the territory. Yeah,
that's okay.
Territory.
I mean, you know, Lee. Brought up something earlier. Is like, you know, he said, Rob, do you think that your covers are bringing this upon you, you know, this wrath upon you? Is that you know, we're presenting this to the public as, you know, it's sitting right next to like a Hollywood movie on the shelf, so people are maybe expecting, so, you know, their expectations have changed, and perhaps they're just not ready for it, or they're just not interested in lower budget films, but we've kind of given them. So look, if you read something that says Caesar and Otto's Deadly Christmas, that sounds like a comedy. If we dropped the Caesar and Otto and just said, this is called Deadly Christmas and there's a killer Santa on the cover, then I would say, okay, yeah, we've deceived the public to a certain degree just to get on the shelves, which, you know, people do all the time. But I think
there... I think you guys walked enough of the line that even if you had perfectly advertised it, there'd still be a fair amount of haters who just present the fact it's low budget.
I give the example. We put out a film in October called Murder University. Now, that's an homage to like 80s slashers by Richard Griffin, who's done a few films with us. And it's tongue in cheek. It's not, it's got gore. There's beheadings.
It's not a straight horror film. Yeah,
not a straight horror film. But you know, people see it and they're like, "Well, it's not as good as Hatchet 3 or whatever." You know, whatever's like the $1.5 million
movie. It was that kind. They weren't like trying to make the director sound like he should never have been born.
There were a couple bad ones. There's some really mean trolls out there, and you know, I always tell you guys, don't even think about it. Just think about it like, you know, when I read a bad review of something, if the content's something I want to see, I rent it or buy it. I don't care what the critic has to say. Who trusts critics anymore?
Well, all you have to do in the case of this particular film, read, like, you know, the extreme reactions all over the map. Just look at that trailer. If that trailer looks like a film that you want to see that looks like something unique and fun, then that's the film they should take out. Deadly Xmas's trailer says it all. So if that seems appealing to you, you know, that's what you should go by. You know, I mean, Bill, okay, not to be hypocritical because I'm saying I don't necessarily believe everything you hear, but Bill Moseley, who's been one of the great horror actors out there, was a critic for Elvira's Horror Hunt. What he did behind closed ballot at the time, his review of the film was, "I love this film," he said of Deadly Xmas. Now, he comes from a background that's a little esoteric. He got it inside and out. He loved it. He could not have raved about it anymore. This is Bill Moseley, not somebody from the So-and-So Herald who's got an axe to grind. This is Bill Moseley. So if Bill Moseley can stand behind this film, then I do not feel like I did something wrong. You know, and Ain't It Cool and Horror Hound. Those are the voices that are championing this film, and there's others who are, it just rubs them the wrong way, because again, I just think that for some people, it just makes their head explode because it's just not what they're accustomed to. And maybe these same people, I remember when Darren Millar was talking about Deadly Xmas. He said that, you know, this is the kind of film that, you know, there's going to be people who find it really funny, and there's other people who are going to hate it because it's new, because it's different, and they're just not going to be open-minded to it. And some of these same people a few years from now are going to come by it again and say, you know what? I get it. So I think hopefully we're ahead of the curve in some kind of way, you know, and some people who are harsher on it now will say, okay, I get what they're going for. Because I don't think that, you know, those who are so, like, vengeful, they're not getting what the concept is. They're not really looking at what, you know, what I'm going for. A lot of times it's like you try to force your own movie onto another when you watch something like, oh, this film was wrong because it's not a horror film, or this film was wrong because it's not like this film, rather than just looking at it what it is and judging it accordingly. This is a schlocky, satirical film that's about corporatism and Satanism. It's you know, as I say, I can't think of another film that has been quite like this. I was just going for something fresh. You appreciated that. A number of people appreciate it. Now you bring on the hate. and that's what we feel from that spot on.
It's only been a couple of, like, I would say outright, like, mean reviews. I mean, it's been pretty good, man. I don't really feel the hate. Yes, sir.
I got to interject because, man, it's at Family Video and I can't get the damn thing because it's checked out all the time.
Is it really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, that's awesome. Me to send you one?
Yeah, I do. That'd be awesome.
I'll send you a copy, but you got to send Dave, send him $3 over PayPal.
I could do that.
Giving it away, man, you know?
I'm
I'm right in front of the filmmaker saying I'm going to give you a free copy. Now, he doesn't get paid. I don't get paid. How does that work?
I don't get paid.
He doesn't get paid. He's
the engineer at the podcast. He's got to get something. So you're getting paid. You're getting paid in Deadly Excellence.
He'll review.
I'll review. He's
a member of the press.
Now, when you watch this film, you know, I want you to look at it from the point of view that I said. This is like Dumb and Dumber meets Silent Night, Deadly Night, meet the trauma film, thrown all together. It's going to have some really bad effects, and some of, you know, the performances are completely heartfelt, but at times completely over the top. It is fast-moving, and it has more story than you know what to do with. That is... It, and hopefully entertaining from beginning to end.
I agree with you, Dave, but I would take out the trauma reference. And I love Lloyd and what he's done and his endurance over the years. But you're
trauma
definitely a step above.
Trauma in terms of production value is not content. Some of the effects of a trauma film.
Right.
On an aesthetic level.
On an aesthetic level, maybe like some of the stuff Lloyd's done himself, that aesthetic, where he's done some really brilliant stuff himself when he's directed pictures, but not some of the stuff that he picks up is kind of just like throwaway junk shot in a backyard kind of thing. You have production value there that is not of that level. That is definitely three or four steps up from that.
It's the production value of the stuff that Lloyd's directed. That's what I mean by a trauma film. Sort of like more of the Lloyd-directed stuff.
Right, because now people think of trauma now, they think of like the pickups. They think of the stuff that's on the tables at the conventions, just stuff you never heard of. It's kind of, you know, three guys sitting in a backyard with zombie makeup on or something. It's not that. This is a high-definition, very good-looking film that is edited professionally and lit well. And, you know, it's not like, hey, we just grabbed a camcorder on weekends and did this. This was a pro shoot.
That's the danger.
You got exactly what I'm going for. I think, you know, we don't compare to a million-dollar film, but we certainly don't compare to a film shot in your backyard either.
Right.
You know, we're somewhere, you know, we're aspiring as far as we can go. And it's out there. Now, Rob, you have a lot of films handed to you, and you don't pick up a number of films that you're presented. What percentage of films that you're presented do you ultimately say, okay, I'm gonna pull the trigger on this, I'm gonna release this?
Oh God, I mean it changes year to year because some years we get more. But I mean, I would say maybe 30% maybe we take 20-30%.
It's a hard decision
of what we see or what's presented to us, you know. And It's a very tough decision, especially for us because we're a small label, you know, and it's... What's that? Do we lose Dave?
We lost him.
So, but, you know, and I appreciate, like, I...
Curses,
you know,
Skype.
Do we lose...
So I'm here.
What is this?
You hear me?
Okay. You're breaking up, and our producer's yelling at us. Okay. Yeah. Todd, can I sign off and then we go into the archive with Dave?
We can go for a few minutes. I have a couple things I have to do.
All right, listen, you've been listening to stay on the phone, Dave. We're gonna go over, but it'll be in our archive and won't be live. You've been listening to the Movies Hate You Show. Mr. Reed, thank you. Todd, thank you. We've been here with Dave Campfield, director of Cesar Renato's Deadly Xmas, which you can get on Amazon, Family Video, blah, 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 all the usual suspects, and VOD on cable TV. Check your provider. If you have Verizon Vios, you can get this movie. Or Cox. 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 You ever hear of Cox, Lee?
We'll save that for out.
Okay, yeah. Good. All right, so there you go. Movies Hate You signing off. See you next time. Listen to the archive to hear Dave Campfield's full interview coming up. Okay, we signed off, Todd. Now we're going to keep going with Dave.
Hey, Dave, I have a question for you.
Hold on. Are we still on, we on, Todd?
Yeah, we're rolling.
We're rolling? Dave, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, go ahead, Lee.
Dave, how seriously do you take the reviews? Are you a kind of person who reads every single review and takes them to heart?
I am horrible. Like, this is the way you're supposed to be. Like, oh, the reviews are what they are, and people write what they do, and then it's okay. And then there's me, and I reflect so many independent filmmakers. I really don't want to personalize things. I don't even want to take it out on another critic. They feel the way that they do for any number of reasons, and sometimes it's not even the film itself. You know, sometimes it's just a general preference thing. It's when they get so hyperbolic, it gets hurtful. You know, and I would really like to get to the point where I could, you know, just take the word from those that I trust, like Rob and some of the, you know, other filmmakers that I trust very closely and some of the viewers who come to me afterward and talk to me. But I'm at that point because there was just a handful of reviews, like a cluster of reviews that came in that sort of were equally vitriolic on the film, and I just thought to myself, I mean, I guess you guys don't really quite get what I'm going for here. I think you're expecting a different kind of film, and I don't know what else I could have done. It's a fully realized version of what I was going for. It's the film that I was imagining. It's not not an exercise in randomness. So it's just, you know, it's just hurtful. It's just disappointing, and I'm not quite mature enough as a filmmaker to distance myself from it, but that is something that I will have to do.
Well said. I mean, it still hurts when I see it as the studio or label doing this. It still hurts because you want people to say, you know, because, you know, this was a decision I made, and I had said earlier before, you know, while we were talking about the film before you came on, I was saying, like, you know, my blood, sweat, and tears is in this to a not an equal degree of you guys who put the movie together, but there's something there. It's my decision. It's my choice that is also being critiqued. So in other words, it's like when somebody gives you a bad review, it's like they're giving me a bad review for my taste, in a sense, or my curation Absolutely. Skills, or my decision to do business with you and to put this on market. They're attacking that. They don't say that, but that's where I feel it's coming from. And I'm like, you know what? I started out as a critic, you know, so to speak, doing, you know, I have my own zine for a number of years. I wrote for many other zines. I trashed films back then that I love today. Because back then, I wasn't sophisticated enough to understand the film, I had a fight with my girlfriend that day when I wrote the review, or, you know, I had a crappy minimum wage job and I was trying to do this, you know, this love of writing about movies on the side. Whatever it was, you know, or it just didn't fit into what I was into. I was into John Woo movies at the time, and this movie was an American-made martial arts film that sucked and had Billy Blanks in it, and it wasn't from Hong Kong, so I trashed it. Whatever the reason was, it was complex. So I try to apply that when somebody reviews one of my films or when I talk to filmmakers. I'm like, ah, don't worry about it, because there's so many factors involved, and we're not in a climate where that Variety review is your make or break. If you don't get a good review in Variety, you're not getting distribution. Hey, man, you've already got distribution. You're already out there worldwide.
What do you need
from a critic? Like, I'm telling you that, like, a movie like Disco Exorcist that we released has not had one bad review, and it's had probably close to 100 reviews since we've released it, and it has not changed the numbers. Like, if we get, you know, 20 good reviews in a week, the sales that week are not any better than if we didn't get any reviews that week. So it's not like, you know, there's so much noise out there and people have so many choices that it's not like reviews don't always equal sales or lack thereof if it's a bad review. So that's kind of how I try to put it in perspective for people, that the reviews don't have the weight that they used to. You know, if it was back in the day, there were, you know, four outlets for reviews. You either saw a review on TV from, like, you know, at the movies with Ebert and Siskel, or you read it in the newspaper, and or it was word of mouth. That was it. Now everybody's a critic.
Use a hackneyed expression. Yeah, exactly. Use a hackneyed expression. Everybody's a critic. All you need is a blog. But I mean, there's nothing saying that, you know, those opinions aren't invalid. I just feel like there's a certain. I just don't know what their issue is with me. Those, you know, I'm just talking about the last 3 days, because it's been like, these have been three hard days of like three or four reviews that have come in that have just been like somebody grabbing a sword and stabbing me in the face, metaphorically.
Have there been more than the two that we talked about?
Yeah, there's another one today that's sort of like akin to what we were talking about. It's like, geez, this is so not funny. I watch my, you know, this, blah, blah, blah. Like, it was more than this.
Was that the Oklahoma Gazette?
No, it was somebody else. Yeah.
Was that the Oklahoma Gazette? Which one?
Look at the clips. Tell me if you don't find those clips. No, I can't even remember what the site was, but it was something again akin to acting like this is so torturous to sit and watch this film. I swear, it's like I'm being sodomized and vomited on the same time. And they're like clawing and elbowing.
But here's the funny thing: is that these people are asking us for the movie to review. Like, we're not, like, there's no one holding a gun to their head saying you have to review this new movie from this studio you've never heard about, from this filmmaker you've never heard about. It's like they're choosing to review your movie over every Warner Brothers movie they got that week on DVD. So what is it? They just like to bully around people who have no power over them? You know, in other words,
I want my $2 that wrote the review today. It's like, I really have to, you know,
I didn't see
be happy
one.
About the positives. Yeah, that sucks too. I just be happy about the positives. Bill Moseley's out there, who, you know, who are established, who get exactly where you're coming from, and not so much pay credence to those who just don't quite get where I'm coming from. You know, I personally like, I think Dumb and Dumber is a very mainstream film, and that's the kind of comedy that I'm going for, just a little more over the top. You know, so I'm thinking if I can kind of connect with those people and those who, you know, get the tenants of Silent Night the other night.
This is a little more, to me, this is more underground than that. You know, it's I give you more credit than that. Just like, it's not your attempt at a mainstream movie. It's like, that's the only thing you can really compare it to, because there isn't anything in the mainstream that compares to it. So, you know, I don't, you know, I think I see the Dumb and Dumber there, but it's almost, that's doing the film a disservice. My favorite thing is when you do the Garbage Day spoof. It's just so hilarious, because whoever the script girl is in that scene is just hilarious. She's like, Garbage Day! The famous Silent Night Deadly Night 2.
Lauren Francesca. That's Lauren, yes. Francesca, who has her own, you know, following. So she comes back. She's not only in the scene earlier in the film, she comes back at the very end. I want to get her as much in there as much as I could. She's terrific, and you know, many people know who she is as well, and she's really an ace.
Yeah. It's funny, and, from the other side of the fence, Dave, from the marketing and sales side of the fence, I mean, I've been told since I started doing this that horror comedy does not sell, and don't do horror comedy. And I've bucked that advice on a few occasions, and this film was no exception when I said, well, I really don't care, because I think this is worth being out there, you know. And maybe that, you know, people who've been in the business 30 years doing sales have told me horror comedy is a tough sell. And that's why when you think about it, you're like, well, what's been the last horror comedy that's been a smash? It's like Shaun of the Dead. Well, that was, you know, 7 years ago. You know, it's not something that horror comedy is not a household term. So I think the fans. Yeah. Well, Tucker and Dale, Tucker and Dale wasn't a phenomenon. Tucker and Dale was a VOD hit. Tucker and Dale, you know, was decent, but it wasn't like a smash. It wasn't, you know, there was a lot of buzz on it, but it wasn't like Shaun of the Dead, where it was, you know, big theatrical and just
but
kind
actually,
of.
Shaun of the Dead still did not do well financially at the box office. It domestically speaking, that was almost a flop. You know, it was only because the budget was so low, relatively speaking. And that had a big push from Universal, and that was still not a big hit. People gravitated away. I mean, what was Zombieland? I guess this is close to a real comedy horror.
Zombieland made a lot of money, and it's not funny at all. Yeah. Not funny at all. But my point is that horror comedy does not make money historically. So people are afraid of it. And I think that's because fans are either afraid of it or they're not interested in it. They don't want their horror with comedy. They want their horror by itself and the comedy by itself. So when you attempt it, you are kind of poking the animal in the cage, and they might get angry.
Right. You know, but the thing is, like, look, it's mostly, this is really mostly a comedy that teeters into suspenseful territory here. And, you know, let's be honest, it's really a comedy kind of film.
It is.
Now,
it is.
My hope is, my hope is really to be able to, you know, connect this film to the audience and bring forth, you know, Cesar Donato's Paranormal Halloween. You know, there's that treatment in place. I don't know if you read it. You know, treatment. If the enthusiasm is there, I by all means want to do this. If not, I got some serious things that I would like, you know, that I'll take on. You know, and certainly there's nothing less becoming than a filmmaker attacking some of the audience. It's not really what I'm about. And it just in this particular case, it just happens to be a couple of days where we get a string, just a few reviews from people who are particularly harsh. So that's the only reason that my mind is there at the moment. You know, I hope the audience figures it out, that they enjoy it, they understand where they're coming from, check out all the special features, because this thing is wall to wall with special features.
Packed.
You know? And you maybe you love it, maybe you hate it, but you're gonna have a strong reaction one way or the other.
I agree. And I think they will lean more toward love if they go into it the right mindset. If they not go into it saying, "Oh God, I loved Silent Night, Deadly Night," you know, with the remake, I loved it, and I can't wait to see another Killer Santa movie. And then they put this on, they're like, "This is not what I wanted. I'm mad at these guys."
Right.
It says on the box. It says on the box, you know, it's a spoof. It's a, you know, in our marketing, it said it's a spoof. And if you look at the box and you see that Brink Stevens, Leanna Quigley, you know, Lloyd Kaufman,
Joe Esteves,
Robert Zadar, if you see these names and think that you're getting, you know, Rob Zombie, Silent Night, Deadly Night, I can't help you. You know, like if you can't do the minimal kind of intellectual research into what you're popping in your player, I'm sorry. You know, I'm not going to...
Also, you know, this comedy is pretty silly, you know, and sometimes it might even be too silly for some people. But I don't care, but I happen to love Simpsons Treehouse of Terror as big inspiration of this.
Now, yeah, I see that.
Yeah. Now, so that's some of the leaning, some of the stylistic influence of this as well. So, you know, hey, I'm accessible. Guys, tell me your love, your hate, whatever you feel about it. You can just, you know, hit us up on the Caesar and Otis Diddly X's Facebook page. You know, you just feel what you feel. It is what it is.
Now, there are other Caesar and Otto adventures, and where can people go to engage with you if they want to, you know, sometimes they're younger filmmakers who want some advice, if they want to talk to you about filmmaking, or if they want to see what else Caesar and Otto are up to, where can they go? Give us some URL action.
There is a Caesar and Otto YouTube page, Caesar and Otto Forever. We get a bunch of shorts, including Piggyzilla, which is on the DVD itself. Yep. So, you know, there's that. There's CaesarAndOtto.com, CaesarAndOtto, and just find me on Facebook, Dave Canfield. I'm always there for you. If you ever, anytime you want to talk, you want to chat, you want to talk film, I'm around. I'm just doing my show on Wednesday nights called Nerdgasm, and I'm in pre-production on some films, including the next Caesar and Otto, but I'm around. If you will write to me, I will take the time to write back to you.
The next Caesar and Otto will be a Paranormal Activity style spoof.
In a way, no, it's actually going to take on The Shining and Poltergeist and Insidious and Sinister. We're taking on a lot of different movies, including Paranormal Activity, but it's, you know, and Halloween 1-3. So there's a lot of things that we're playing, paying reference to in that one, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Even
Jam-packed.
Some Idle Hands in there. Jam-packed. Even Idle Hands. So hopefully
Idle Hands. No one remembers that movie.
Well, in a small respect.
What's next? My Boyfriend's Back? Are you going to pay homage to that one? Remember that one?
Hey, that was a good idea. See, the thing is, like, the whole film doesn't pay homage to that, and there's a little comedy element of it that the film pays homage to. And the rest of it, it's really, you know, taking on mostly The Shining and Paranormal Activity. So those are the keystones, cornerstones of that plot line. I look forward to your thoughts on that. Let's hopefully this film's a hit so we can justify making it. And, like, guys, if you guys laugh at that, don't just try to be smart. That's not funny. Just sit back, relax, and find it's funny. I am motivated to make this next film a reality. If not, okay. I'll put it online a few years from now as a script, and you guys, and that's how people can see it. Because I do get, like, there's a lot of people who do hit me up on Facebook and tell me how, you know, their enjoyment of it and their fandom of it, you know. So I know that there's, you know, those out there who do respond really well to it, and I'm hoping for some more.
Now, how's this been happening since, you know, we just came out on the 24th, so has this been, I'm sorry, since Street Date is what I'm trying to say. Have you seen an increase in people saying, hey, I rented it, or I saw it on cable, or whatever? Have you seen kind of a fan reaction personally to you?
Yeah, well, first of all, the people who are responding first are those who were fans of Caesar and Otto Summer Game Massacre. And
right.
They hit me up, and they said, this one's even better. I really like Summer Game Massacre even better. So those are the ones that are first and foremost. And hopefully, you know, people will discover it little by little. And for those who aren't, whose heads don't explode for the film being so different than they anticipated, they might really dig it. And then hopefully they'll go back and they'll see the other one, and we'll just, you know, the series will continue. And if not, hey, I had a good time while it lasted.
I don't think this is the last of Caesar and Otto. No matter what happens. I don't think this is the end.
I hope not. Although This Is the End was quite a damn good film, I'm gonna be honest.
This Is What?
Although This Is the End was quite a damn good film.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. We're going to wrap it up. But you're saying that if this is the end, this is kind of like bowing out at the top. I agree.
Absolutely. Okay. So it's wonderful. And this show is in the archive. I'm going to be able to find this on your site.
This will be in the archive. You'll find it on Jackalope Radio. If you go to the Movies Hate You subsection, which is easy to find in the archives. I don't know if it's going to be in the super deep archives or the recent archives, Todd, but I'm sure it'll be in the recent.
Recent, yeah.
It should be up by, it's a holiday, Todd. When are we going to have this up by?
I'm glad it's a holiday. I get to catch up on everything, so it'll be up there probably about Saturday.
About Saturday. So check after Saturday. If you have a problem, Dave, finding it, hit me up and I'll pressure Todd.
Todd, Saturday's the Sabbath. Okay. Is that a difference?
No difference to me.
Because, okay. You know, Todd's running a low-budget hand-to-mouth radio station like we all are low-budget, so sometimes it takes him a little bit longer, as it does for all of us. But I will get on top of him. Literally.
I like it when he does that.
I love getting on top, especially when we're in Vegas. I love getting on top
of
him.
That was awesome. What happens there stays there.
That's right. Not anymore.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, you and that long hair.
So it was wonderful talking to you both.
It was great
thanks
talking
so much.
To you, Dave.
I love the wild eyes behind this film. Best company I could think of for it. And hopefully we'll all be talking soon.
We will, Dave. We hope to have you back. Keep it going. Keep Caesar and Otto alive. Even if we bomb it for you, please keep it alive. Keep your creativity alive. Because you seriously, if I didn't know you on a business level, I would say you're a very talented dude. You should really, you know, really keep it going. Even if you have to come up with something else and go in a different direction, you need to keep it coming out. Seriously, don't give up.
Thanks so much, pal. We got plan A, B, and C, regardless of what happens.
That's right. Caesar and I was Deadly Christmas, available everywhere movies are sold, especially where Killer Santa movies are sold. But this is not a Killer Santa movie that you think it is, but try it anyway.
This is not your father's Killer Santa.
This is not your father's Silent Night, Deadly Night. And it's not that stupid one with Malcolm McDowell in it, either.
Malcolm McDowell, why don't you just get the Hamburglar and Grimace while you're at it?
That's right, I love my. That's my favorite. One of my favorite scenes in the movie, man. Garbage day! It's time to go. Movies Hate You is over. Dave Canfield, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Lee Peterson, thank you. Mr. Sheets, thank you. We will see.